Good evening, this is Gary Cavanagh here on the right side. I'm here today with my friend and colleague Michael Dwyer. Today is Monday the 10th of February. It is 2 days after the election even. We are doing this in, it's about 1 o'clock in the morning right now. Most of the polls have closed, because that is what we are talking about today. The polls. We're going to do this fairly quick, give you an idea of the lay of the land. Counting is still going to keep going, so it'll really be Wednesday before we can go. Here is exactly what has happened. However, to start off, I think, with the biggest piece of news here. Well, not the biggest, but the most easily accessible, should we say. The percentage of first preference votes.
Yes.
Sinn Féin, 24.5%. Fine Gael. Well, we'll go to Fianna Fáil first. 22.2%.
Mm-hmm.
Fine Gael, 20.9%. Sinn Féin, by percentage of first preference votes, the largest party in the country.
It's a new day.
And just, if you're curious about how that compares to 2016, Sinn Féin are up over 10 points. They're nearly up 11 points. Fine Gael are down 4.7%.
Mm-hmm.
And Fianna Fáil are down 2.2%.
Yeah.
So it's a bad election for everyone but Sinn Féin and the Green Party, really. And the Social Democrats, who could return a couple of seats, but it's still a bit up in the air. It's been a weird election as well.
I think the Social Democrats are also kind of catching a little bit of a lucky wave, the figures are so distorted across the constituencies by the size of the first preference votes that, generally speaking, we're talking about single candidates are getting. But some places, even where they're getting two candidates, they're getting this massive vote. And it's distorting the shape of the vote all over the place. And people are getting transfers that just wouldn't have been seen in any other historical context. So it's all looking very strange. But I mean, it's Sinn Féin, it's a massive result. And just in context, I mean, people have been saying it, but when we started this conversation about this election, the wise men were all agreed that this was going to be a struggle for Sinn Féin. Sinn Féin were going to find it hard. They had come off a very bad local election. If you look at Wexford, my constituency here, although my one ray of predictive light is, at the beginning of it, I was asked to give a slightly unusual one, and I said, I predict Mython to take a seat at the expense of Paul Keogh. Now, he may not take a seat at the expense of Paul Keogh, as it turns out, but he did take a seat. A man who couldn't get 800 votes at a local election just got 18,000 votes in a general election, Gary.
Mm-hmm.
I was talking to lads who were on the tallies this morning, and they were just going, oh my God. As the Gorey boxes came in, he's an Enniscorthy, he's a Gorey candidate. These were boxes up the far north, very rural districts where you would expect one or two candidates would normally dominate. Mython was coming, was tying them or winning. It was just...
I mean, this is a really unusual election for both because of the Sinn Féin surge and the fact it in many ways seems to be the death of the two-party system, assuming that this is a consistent trend, but also because Sinn Féin, because they thought this was going to be basically a fight to even keep what they had, they pretty much just ran a single candidate in most constituencies. And so you had the situation where they were getting, there's constituencies where they were getting 40% of the first preferences, but there was only one Sinn Féin candidate.
Your man down in Waterford, he 38-40% of the first preference vote.
To give you an idea of how weird like the situation had become, Brid Smith.
Yeah.
Brid Smith she currently has the lowest first preference amount for a candidate who got elected. And she got elected purely on the back of it. And she got elected on the second count. So she got 11% first preferences, elected second count. And that is purely because in a constituency in which the quota is 8,600, the Sinn Féin candidate picked up 17,000 votes.
17? I mean, in Wexford, the 12,500 quota, that's like picking up 25,000 votes in it.
Brit Smith in total got 4,753 votes. The Sinn Féin candidate transferred to her 4,794, which is more than her entire vote. And she takes it on the second count.
The numbers are baffling.
Now, I think that was a deliberate thing. It was one of the smarter things I saw during this election, which was not an election known for smart things.
Nope.
It was a leaflet People for Profit had put out. And it said on it, vote number one Sinn Féin. And then it listed the way you should transfer between the different left-wing parties.
Mm.
And of course, number two was People Before Profit. And so I think they were trying to get people who were interested in going for Sinn Féin, but would never give a number one to People Before Profit. And looking at Brid Smith, that worked.
It was a big thing, I think you'll notice the last few days on social media, that this thing, hashtag transfer left, became a thing in the conversations with all of the various left. Whatever you do, remember, transfer left. Hashtag transfer left. And that has been pretty successful all over the gaff. Single biggest beneficiary of Mylan's transfer, again, was Deirdre Wadding, who was People for Profit candidate. I mean, it won't do her any good, but she got them. It's a great result for Sinn Féin. It's a bad result for Fianna Fáil in that they underperformed. Well, they have that. I don't know why this was. We had this discussion just towards the end of the campaign when I was saying to you guys that everybody was talking about the drop in the Fine Gael vote, but nobody seemed to be talking about the fact that while Fine Gael were trending down, Fianna Fáil were trending down also. And yeah, there's this kind of assumption that, that'll sort itself out and they'll still come back in around 26-27%.
Yeah, so we saw Fine Gael coming out after the exit polls and saying that it looked like their strategy of going hard on Fianna Fáil to pun Fianna Fáil people back to Fine Gael in fear of Sinn Féin had worked. But now when you actually look at the actual vote share, not the projections of it.
Yeah.
It actually looks like there was no real change other than a slight continuation of the trends we were seeing in the polls. It's also interesting that Sinn Féin, instead of going down on the exit polls, which is what they usually do, they usually get less than the exit poll projected, got more.
There were a couple of things about this that we wanted to know, see what would happen. The question was, okay, Sinn Féin are doing it, but we kept on meeting two guys and gals from the two big parties saying, yeah, but listen, these people never vote. They won't come out, and it's going to rain, and they won't come out. The turnout across parts of Dublin was historically high. In some places, boxes are up at 82%. So
yeah, but the overall turnout was only 62 or 63%, which is down on the last general election, I believe.
But in certain pockets, where you had very strong local activity, they got the vote out. If you break it down, areas which had not traditionally voted came out. They may have been actually ISIS. It'd be interesting. Wonder if there is a Sinn Féin, or not a Sinn Féin, but possibly in some places the Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil vote, core vote, was not quite what it could have been. They performed up to the poll predictions. Then the exit poll, Fianna Fáil, you'd expect to go up a couple of points, Sinn Féin to come down a couple of points. No, didn't happen. Sinn Féin, in fact, went up. So they seem to be, on the demographics, they're behaving much, much more like a party which is spread across all the demographics, even though obviously it still skews young, but it's present and strong in all of the demographics now. They're leaders in everywhere except over 65s, I think. Is that right?
Yeah, and even the 50 to 64 demographic Sinn Féin are now the most popular. Now, in a couple of those demographics, you're looking at, you know, a couple of percentage points.
Yeah, but still, but Gary, that's massive.
And I think that's why we didn't see a collapse in the Sinn Féin vote this time. It's moved outside of its normal working class voters. Also, the Saturday election, I don't know if that had any impact on it. I see people now saying that Mary Lou should have run more people in more seats. It was a strategic error not to run more candidates. I think that's absolutely unfair because you pick what you're doing on the best available information. And the best available information is this is an election where we bunker down. We don't have that many candidates, but we invest heavily into them and we make sure we don't lose anything. I would say, however, there is one party you can actually criticise for doing exactly that, for not running enough candidates. And that's Aintu.
It looks like Padraig O'Toole is elected. Is he actually is he elected?
Yeah, Padraig O'Toole at this point has taken his seat. Now, for those who don't know, in order to receive government state funding from a central pot, based on your percentage of the vote share, you need to get at least 2% of the first preference vote. Padder ran, I think, 25 candidates.
Yeah.
Which meant there were numerous constituencies that didn't even have a paper candidate for those who don't know, basically where you run someone and they do nothing in the constituency, but they're purely there so that if someone wants to give you a vote, they can just tick the box. It's relatively common, particularly with relation to the gender quota. With the last couple of elections, we've seen more and more women being run who are very clearly just paper candidates because the parties need to hit the gender quota. Whatever you think of whether or not that's the correct thing to do. I don't think it's usually a big deal as long as you tell the candidates that you're not getting elected. But we have seen situations, and I have seen situations, where candidates have been run and the central party has been like, oh no, you're in with a shot. Or no, you're not. You're getting nothing. So he ran 25, he's got elected. Total percent of first preference vote share, 1.9%.
Yeah, and you know what? It must have been absolutely sickening because until the very end, they were on 2.1.
They were, and then they dropped.
And then they just dropped. In their defense, because they were not a registered party, they would have had to pay, they would have to shell up 500 quid or whatever it was for every paper candidate. They don't have any money. How many constituencies are there? 42? Am I making that up?
42, yeah.
So, if they run another 17, they know it's money they have to run. If they were in present in another 17 constituencies, you'd have to imagine they would have been able to make up that 0.1%.
Yeah, look, it's you get a deposit of 500 euro to run as a candidate. Now, if you get over a certain vote percentage, I'm pretty sure you get your deposit back. You get most of your costs back, so your deposit is back.
If you get a quarter of a quota.
Yeah. So paper candidates would not get that back. However, 2%, I think, is about 250,000 euro
year. Yeah, it's big. For a party like Renew, or for Renew would have been in a position, for example, to run paper candidates because as a registered party, they had no cost.
Yeah, they can run them for free.
They will be regretting it, I'm sure. Now, the other thing is, Gary, you could say, well, you should run anybody. I mean, technically, they could have run the same person in 17 constituencies.
It's perfectly legal to run multiple constituencies. So Padraig O'Toole could have stood in every constituency in this country if he wanted to.
And I don't know what the optics of that would have been, but people have made an issue. I don't know. But they could have. I know, and you know, Gary, on the other hand, that trying to find people to even to put their name forward as paper candidates who are not barking mad is not as easy as people might think.
No, it takes time and it takes money, but not that much money.
And the thing is, you really don't want to discover that the person who's doing it turns out actually to be a lunatic, because then that just ends up damaging everybody.
I remember talking to someone about 2 weeks ago, and they're asking me about Iontu, and I was saying, well, Patter's seat is going to be under pressure. Sinn Féin are trying to take it. He might keep it. To be fair, I thought Castles was actually fairly sure to get in. He didn't in the end. English got in instead, which astounds me, because my parents live in that constituency and he is deeply unpopular. But he got in anyway. But they're asking about it, and my response is he's not running enough people to hit 2%. Because every constituency you take out, you need to concentrate the vote higher and higher in the remaining areas. And you have candidates like Becky Keeley, who took 8% down in, was it Cork?
Cork North West, I think.
But you have other candidates who take, you know, 1%, or they take 2.5%, and you need to spread that out. And I'm not saying it's easy, particularly for a small party like Iontu, but you do it so that you don't end up with a situation where you have 1.9%. And Patter's, like, I know Patter. Patter's a good guy. And he's a smart guy. And I'm sure he has reasons for doing this, but...
But it's a pity. And it's a big pity, particularly when you look at issues like organisation at a local level, creating structures. All of these cost money. Just getting people out. If you're a new party, you're going to look to do communications and media training with them. That costs money. You want to get stationery, you want to have an office, you want, all of this costs money. And you can do it it makes it much more, your life much more difficult.
And he is going to get money as the leader of a political party.
Yeah.
And if they get any more, every candidate Iontu gets elected would give him more money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I don't think any of the Iontu candidates are terribly well lined up at the minute to get elected.
No. Although, not an Iontu candidate, but a bit of a surprise to me, Carol Nolan, who had been talking at one stage with Padre, running as an independent at Laois Offaly, and doing very well.
I mean, there was one thing, I was trying to think of who would be particularly happy with how this election is going. I don't know if they would be particularly happy on the macro level, but when you look at the low level and the people who are losing seats and the people who are keeping seats,
yeah,
I would say the pro-life lobby is actually pretty happy with how this is turning out. I think at this point, none of the TDs who went against abortion have lost their seats. And you've seen prominent repeal pro-choice politicians who have either lost their seat, or like Kate O'Connell, who look like they are going to lose their seat.
I think there may be a couple of Fianna Fáilers who were opposed, who may lose their seats, but it's not because of their position. For example, Mary O'Mahony in Cork West is probably, if she hasn't lost, is going to lose it. But that's not to do with that. It's that Fianna Fáil's second candidate is the son of the previous Fianna Fáil TD, and I think there's local things going on there. It's a pity, because I thought she was a breath of fresh air, a bit of a difference, she was herself. She was a character. I don't want to say a character, because a character diminishes her. But, you know, Gary, you and I meet a lot of politicians, and we like them, I would say, mostly, because most politicians are, you know,
they tend to be nice people.
Nice people.
Or at least able to appear as nice people.
But, you know, there's a certain similarity to particularly the younger ones. She was herself. She had her own voice, and that's really refreshing in politics, as Robin said. But yeah, I mean, look at Jack Chambers.
Jack Chambers, yeah.
Prominent, and was targeted and pointed out in a hissing and a byword. Jack Chambers did very well. I think, was it John McGurk was making the point, or was it yourself, I'm not sure, that one of the things that seems to have happened wasn't that people punished the people who were campaigning for, you know, repeal, but rather those people who had been involved in that campaign kept on talking about it in a way that the voters eventually kind of found a bit weird. And also, yes, they voted for it. They voted for gay marriage. They voted for repeal. But it wasn't that big an issue ultimately in their lives for them. Whereas for the people who were really involved in the campaign, it was a massive thing. And they couldn't kind of let go. Having said that, the biggest face of it was Mr. Harris. And he seems to be comfortable.
Yeah, but there's an interesting lesson here, I think, in particularly for the leadership of political parties.
Yeah.
This election, for when you ask people why they voted, and when you look at the voting patterns, seems to have been primarily about health and housing. And in Fine Gael, it now looks like Owen Murphy and Simon Harris will both keep their seats.
Yes.
But all around the country, Fine Gaelers and Fianna Fáilers are dropping. And I think there's a lesson here that voters will blame the party more than they will blame the individual people, particularly if they have a strong local base.
Yeah.
So voters blame Fine Gael for putting those people there more than they actually want to see those people lose their seats.
And also, this is a lesson for maybe people who are more on the right, that if you do your job and you're reasonable, people will allow you to have heterodox opinions. They won't punish you for that. And that's a lesson both for the individuals, but also for the parties, that you can have people in your party who don't follow a particular line. The voters will accept that. Voters, in some ways, are pretty reasonable on that kind of thing. They say, you know, it's okay. I don't agree with him about that, but that's not what I'm voting about. I thought it's very interesting, again, something new about this election. We've talked about it before, that health is always a big issue, but then when you actually dig down in the polling, the exit polling data, it's never a top three issue for why people vote. The reasons people vote in this are very different to what I've seen before. Health comes in number one, 32%, and then housing and homeless. Taxation and jobs. Jobs comes in at number 6%, and taxation 4%. I mean, that's very low, because historically in Ireland, jobs was absent. But then again, that's a reflection, I suppose, of the economy historically. And taxation, big issue, always a big issue. But is it a little bit of a virtuous circle there, Gary? Neither of the parties, neither Fine Gael nor Fianna Fáil, really made tax an issue.
I mean, it's...
So tax didn't become an issue.
No, like, I would like to vote on taxation. But who would I vote for?
Well, yeah.
I mean, Fine Gael came out and said, literally, halfway through the race, oh, by the way, here's a potential tax break for you, and it's pretty good.
Yeah.
But I saw it, and I sort of went... Okay, yeah, like, you're 2 weeks into an election, lads. I don't believe what you're saying.
Particularly when you looked at
also, you've been history. In power for 9 years.
Yeah.
And then you go, well, if you give us another term, we'll cut taxes. The other problem they have, and I saw, like, the Fine Gaelers, I saw saying things like, you know, we're fiscal conservatives and people who are into prudent economics should vote for us. I remember talking to one, lads, the country is €214 billion in debt. And you've done really nothing to stop that.
We did not hear, well, at least I didn't hear a single word about debt during this campaign. Did you?
No, but you had this weird thing where they were going, well, people who care about the economy and fiscal issues should vote for us. And then there's a litany of ways they failed on it. So it's a sort of, people who care but don't terribly know anything about it.
Yeah.
But like, there's no difference, really. Like, if in general on taxation, Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael not terribly different, and both probably untrustworthy.
It was interesting that before the campaign began, the widespread accepted opinion amongst the media was that there was going to be a something of a green wave. Climate was a big, big issue. Now, I think that what we have seen is that that was very much a, that was an opinion that was held within that group of people.
That even after the local elections, when people were talking about a green wave, you and I sat down, and I'm pretty sure we did it on the podcast.
We went through the actual
results and went, there's no green upsurge here.
No.
It was just a narrative that these people, and actually it may be the worst kind of narrative, because then you go into the election and your own people expect you to do really well. But I think we have, yeah, Carol Nolan is performing really well. She'll probably take the seat looking at the transfers beneath her.
Yeah.
And we've had people like Catherine Zappone is gone. Lisa Chambers, I think, is probably gone. Yeah. One of the major drivers of repeal within Fianna Fáil.
Kate O'Connell.
Unless she gets a very, very lucky transfer pattern, is gone as well. So I think she's gone, but doesn't realise she's gone. Joan Burton is gone. Stephen Donnelly looks like he's going to be knocked out by a Social Democrat candidate.
The irony.
Regina Doherty is gone. You're seeing a lot of the people. Catherine Noon, who's very involved, is polling at about 2%. You're seeing a lot of the people who put a lot of their effort into repeal from Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil receiving absolutely no benefit from it.
And
you're seeing candidates who were on the other side.
And also candidates in Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil who, as a consequence of their role in the campaign, had very high profiles.
Yeah, Kate O'Connell, for Kate O'Connell to lose, that woman had the profile of a minister. Fairly easily.
And it's axiomatic, isn't it, in politics? You know, the more profile you have, the better it has to be for your election prospects.
I did. Now, Kate O'Connell hasn't lost yet, so she might be able to pull it back, but it's unlikely. And there are some interesting people in trouble, like Pascal. He is currently second in his constituency. But when you look below him at the people who are going to transfer up, very difficult to see where he's going to get the transfers. So he could actually be pushed to fifth, which is one thing I love about the Irish electoral system.
The first will be the last, and the last
will be the first.
He could be. But if we're going to have a fiver on it, I'd have a fiver that he scrapes in on the fourth
seat. He might take the last
now,
seat.
Just to look at that constituency, how times change, Gary. Mary Fitzpatrick is a Fianna Fáil candidate in there. Once upon a time, not that long ago, Fianna Fáil will be taking 20,000 first preferences there. Well, yeah, taking 17 or 18 first in the glory when Bertie was there. And now, it's all washed away. It's like Ozymandias looking at me in despair. Again, a couple of other things I thought were interesting about the analysis of the campaign. When they asked people when they made their mind up, 48% of people knew before the campaign who they were going to vote for. So slightly less than half of the voters. 28% during the campaign, 16% in the last couple of days, and 8% today. So, for someone who I'm one of those people who likes to think that campaigns are a lot of noise and great fun, but actually increasingly not that important. This looks like the campaign was important.
It does. It looks like the campaign was legitimately important. It's just being reported now that Chambers has lost her seat.
So that means that Fianna Fáil lose a seat in Mayo?
Yeah, Dillon, it looks like, has going to jump over. So That is a future leader, Micheál Martin's protege.
Yeah.
Gone.
Hmm.
Now, an interesting thing about this election also, neither Micheál Martin nor Leo were elected on the first count in their constituencies.
Yeah, it's a while since that's happened.
And, like, it took a while for those boys to get over the line. Now, they were never in any danger of not going over the line. But you don't want to be the leader who sits around on count six.
I think the last time a sitting Taoiseach... God, when was the last time? Garth Fitzgerald didn't get elected in the first count in 89, but he wasn't Taoiseach anymore. I think in 87 he was elected in the first count, but didn't bring in a running mate, and that was, and neither has Leo. To be fair to Micheál Martin, he's also running in a constituency which has another very strong Fianna Fáil candidate. So Micheál McGrath, if you didn't have Micheál McGrath as a running mate, but someone maybe less of a machine and less of a profile, he might have hoovered up the votes.
It was one of the Fine Gael. It was an anonymous quote given by one of the Fine Gael advisors, I think, to the Examiner, when they were talking about what was going to happen in the election, and they said that there are going to be people with running mates. And it's basically going to be, it's like putting two rats into a bag.
Yeah, yeah.
And you wait to see which one of them comes out alive. And that is really Fine Gael's election. You're looking at someone and you're just trying to figure out how many Fine Gaelers they have below them they can cannibalise.
You know what? You talk about rats in bags. Right now, if you want, the best bag of rats, I think, available at the moment in the country is in Wexford, where they've suspended, but at the moment, shall we say, two seats to fill. We'll say Howland, Mithen is elected, Howland and Brown will be elected. There's two seats to fill, and there are four candidates, basically separated by a couple of hundred votes, and a lot of votes to come from independents, into character, all sorts of things happening there. Lots of permutations possible. But there's 100 and something votes between Michael Darcy and Paul Keogh. It looks almost identical to the election before last, where Darcy started off a couple of hundred votes ahead of Keogh and ended up losing the seat. But I advert to this because the person that's in the middle of all of this and really doing at least one of the things doing damage to him again is the Bowl of Verona Murphy of this well known to this parish. And the thing is, Gary, if I was Michael Darcy, or indeed Paul Keogh, to be part of me right now wondering how much do I have to thank Simon Harris for the fact that I no longer have a seat in Dáil Éireann. Because from now, this may be nonsense, but I was told by fairly well-placed people that she had been thinking about running hard, but that Simon Harris's comments, that was what pushed her over. And if it didn't push her, if it didn't really make a decision, it really energized her.
That's the problem. If you start mocking someone nationally, and they know there's a way they can get back at you, you may get them to do that.
Hindsight is wonderful and all that, but we said this at the time, so it's not that much hindsighty. They ran this woman, and then, within a few days of her explanations coming out in the video saying she explained herself, she had been said they would be running her 2-4 days after Pascal said she would run, but then they changed their minds, and they said, what was it, he was glad she had not won.
He said she was, this is Leo, is it?
Yeah.
He said he was glad she hadn't won and that she wouldn't have lasted a long time in Fine Gael.
Then Harris made the famous comment where he said to the effect, was it a good idea not to run her? That's a decision that's looking better by the minute. I think possibly Coveney made a comment. Several others made comments anyway. And they basically had a situation where the Taoiseach of the country was calling her a disreputable person.
As someone who at that point was a private citizen.
Yeah.
Because the election was over. Now, what I do really love about that, and this, I think, if she takes the seat, is going to be the final kicker. The seat projections that UCD is coming out with, based on roughly what we've seen, are Sinn Féin 37 seats, which out of 42 candidates is an incredible result. I mean, incredible. Do you know what they're projecting for Fine Gael?
One less?
One less.
In other words, one seat in Wexford less?
So one would say they are one Verona Murphy away from being the second biggest party in the country, as opposed to, for the first time ever, being the third biggest.
That's brilliant. I mean, she's sitting there now. She is 500 votes ahead of Darcy, 600 votes ahead of Keogh, and a lot of votes still to come from independents and conservative voters.
Yeah, I mean, she also took Verona's a lot of votes from Sinn Féin. She was, in the first count, she came in, I think she was the eighth highest. Count two, fifth highest. Count three, fourth highest. And she is really transfer friendly.
Yeah, she took 670 odd votes from Mytham, the Sinn Féiner, and his surplus. Mm. Whereas Paul Keogh, who was also from Enniscort, same town as Mytham, took up, I think, 115 or something. So that gap narrowed, bang, in one go, 500 votes of a narrowing. And so now she's gone ahead. So I think, look at the numbers right now, Gary, I think the Verona's well placed to take
the seat. Well, you have Sheehan is going to go first. He's got 5,000 votes. That's going to go most likely to Malcolm Byrne and James Brown.
Well, before Sheehan, Carty will go.
Carty is above Sheehan, isn't he?
He may have to.
He's up. The worst thing that can happen to Malcolm Byrne here is that most of Sheehan's votes transfer to Brown, because Brown is shy of the quota. Brown is maybe 3,000 votes shy of the quota. Sheehan has 5,000. If 3,000 go to Brown and only 2 go to Byrne, he's in a good place, but he really wants as many of that 4,900 as he can. And that'll jump him over Darcy, maybe over Verona. And so you'll end up with Sinn Féin, Labour, Fianna Fáil, Verona. And two Fine Gaelers just missing out.
What I think the big thing also, Byrne is slightly ahead of Keogh at the moment. I think Sheen is being eliminated. This is what will be done tomorrow. And then after that, Carty. Now, I should explain to the listener, Carty is an independent. He's got 5,700, and that's before Sheehan, which is a tremendous result for him. He's a councillor in the south, the deep south of the county, he's independent, and he's not a left-wing independent. So
you expect him to transfer heavily to Murphy.
You know, certainly Murphy should be placed to take a good bit of that vote. I think Malcolm Byrne's best hope, if he has a hope, is that Keogh gets ahead of Darcy. Because if Keogh is eliminated for the last seat, then he'll elect Michael Darcy from Fine Gael to Fine Gael. However, Darcy is from the same town as Byrne, and there will be quite a bit of second preferences there. And that might be just enough if he gets a strong. But anyway,
the great joy of the Irish electoral system, where you can get to a point where someone goes, I'll give you a number 8 because you're from the same area, and then you just elected on it.
But the big news is that Verona is sitting there on 7,800 votes, and she's now gone ahead of Keogh by over 1,000 votes.
And
she's 1,000 ahead of Byrne. She's 900 ahead of Darcy. And
she's nearly 1,000 votes ahead of Darcy.
Yeah, so I think she's looking very good. And if they had just kept their mouths shut, Gary, I don't think that she would have run.
Michael, I think a lot of the problems Fine Gael have had over the last 9 years could be summed up with the phrase, and this didn't have to happen if you just kept your mouth shut.
No, of course, she would have been running as
Yeah, I mean, she was running as a Fine Gael candidate.
But listen, even if they wanted to get her out, they could have found a way of saying, you know, Verona, we think you're great, but you know the press has been just such bastards. The lies. There was a way of managing it.
Yeah, and you know, have you considered maybe a Shannon seat after the election?
Very good. Well done, Gary. Or have you considered a position maybe on a state board?
Look, yeah, and look, we'll sort you out, but it's terrible what people have been. It can be done, and it's easy to do.
Would you like to be a director of RTE? Would you like to be on the board of the National Gallery?
Yeah, you don't want. Oh, by the way, we know we convinced you to run for us, but now we're just going to publicly, on a national level, insult you. And you can do nothing about it because we are more powerful than you. And then, oh God, now, but if she turns their result from bad to, like, historically bad, to the collapse of Fine Gael as the second largest party, I will laugh.
That would
Speaking of people not being able to shut their mouths.
Yes.
Did you hear the comments reported from Owen Murphy's people to reporters about Kate O'Connell and why she was losing?
I heard one comment, I don't know if this was what you're referring to, that somebody came out and said that they thought that Owen Murphy was in trouble and Kate was going to take it. And whoever, the journalist, at the end of it, Owen Murphy smiled and winked to the journalist and said, thanks, that'll be worth 1,000 votes. But what were you referring to?
Apparently, one of his people was talking to, I'm not sure if it was Gavin Riley or Richard Chambers, the reporters, about why Kate O'Connell was losing.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much the line, that Kate doesn't know when to shut up.
Yeah. Well, Kate she's a person of strong opinions.
She was, and her sister was running somewhere, was meant to be running, and the other sister, who is her parliamentary assistant and is married to Hugh O'Connell, the Irish Independent political correspondent, had been saying, well, you know, if the sisters get elected, I might run for Shannon's seat. And that would seem to be, it would appear the political dynasty has died.
Before it ever had a chance to truly flourish.
Now, unless, the only way I think she can pull this off is if she takes nearly 1,000 votes from Kevin Humphreys and Jim O'Callaghan gets nothing.
Yeah.
And then she'll knock Jim O'Callaghan out. However, the only reason that could happen would probably be something to do with abortion. And it's Kevin Humphreys. I don't think his voters care that much about abortion.
And also, Jim Callaghan was one of the pro-repeal Fianna Fáilers. So he's not even going to be particularly a target issue on that one. So
yeah. Anyway. No, I think, yeah, overall, we're still waiting to see what comes together with this. Micheál Martin is already sort of saying, well, yeah, maybe there are certain times we could talk to Sinn Féin.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. The transfers are weird. I mean, we could rerun this election and you'd see probably Sinn Féin would go up, but it would be interesting to see if the other left-wing parties would collapse without the transfers.
When we come back on Wednesday, we'll know where all the seats have gone. We'll have heard the beginnings of the overtures. What kind of music is being played by the various parties to each other? It will be better to. But I suppose the message for today is, you know, ultimately, I think you wrote an article for Gripped, which was similar to a conversation we had, I think, on the podcast, where you observed that ultimately it was the actions of Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael that created Sinn Féin as the opposition party.
Mm.
And here's the point that I leave for the time being, anyway, just for the listener to ponder. Okay, this is a bad election for Fine Gael, but I think that really the big takeaway of this is a disaster for Fianna Fáil. 75% of people said they wanted a change in government. That was a constant theme throughout all the polling, that they wanted a change of government. Fianna Fáil was, by a distance, the largest opposition party. It was the opposition. And in a change election, they lost votes and they lost seats.
It was, I mean, both parties, I think, ran horrendous campaigns in different ways. But I remember I was talking to you about how the polls were going towards Fianna Fáil, but my concern was that they had such an arrogance about them, a sense that our time has come. I think I said that nothing can throw out an election as quickly as arrogance, because you start doing stupid shit.
That baffled me. How you could be arrogant on 26% of the vote? That was stupid. I think older hands maybe weren't, but I think maybe something that was just ridiculous behavior. The notion that there are 5 or 6 points ahead in an election, I think this was a really, really bad election for
Fianna Fáil. But the thing is, I think largely their campaign was so poor because they were so arrogant. They knew the polling said people were looking for change.
And they assumed it would be them. Who else could it be?
And they assumed it would be them, as opposed to going out and saying,
"It is
yes,
us.
We supported Fine Gael for years. We did that for this reason. The reason is done. Now we need change." As opposed to this anemic Asher. Like, who else are you going to vote for?
They failed completely to put any kind of clear blue water between themselves and Fine Gael. They had no unique selling point. There was no vision. There was no overarching narrative. They just looked like they were... And Fine Gael, to be fair, Fine Gael, part of their strategy was to rope in Fianna Fáil into the responsibility. And they did, to an extent, succeed. Now, whether or not that turned out to be a good idea is another question. Because I reiterate, I think that the two of them together succeeded in creating Sinn Féin in the voters' minds. Well, that's where we have to go.
I mean, in many ways, we're talking about clear blue water. Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael have become effectively reflections of their respective leaders.
Yeah.
And the problem is, for all that I think Leo and Martin think they're very different people, they're actually quite similar.
Yeah. Put it this way, they would be. There are plenty of places in the world that if they were in the same party, it would not cause comment.
No.
Anyway, as I said, I think that for the time being, we'll wait and see how the thing fully plays out. But we'll probably have a bit of a longer and deeper dive into the whole thing when we return on Wednesday with greater details. But unless, is there anything else you want to add?
No, I mean, look, the next couple of days are going to be full of think pieces. I might even write a couple myself on why this has happened. And
do you know the one I'm dreading? Nonsense. The one I'm dreading, which will be the one which Fintan O'Toole would write, and all the rest of them will write some variation of it, is change. Change. Radical change. Change.
You say that, and you say Fintan O'Toole. But Fintan O'Toole did something during the election that actually made me kind of more positively... made me feel more positively towards him. And it was this. This is a man who spent years at this point talking about Trump and Brexit and the rise of fascism and how fascism isn't everything.
And nationalists. Horrible things.
And populism. And then, during the election, when he thought it was beneficial to him, turned around and effectively, not officially endorsed, but wrote rather positively about a party that effectively has a paramilitary wing.
And is explicitly nationalist in its worldview.
And he did that shamelessly. And it was in fact so shameless, so brazen, that I had to go, you know what? There's a level of graft I can only admire. And we've hit it.
Bravura.
You just, like, yeah, I know I spent years talking about the danger of populism and fascism, but what's the odd paramilitary wing between you and me?
Yeah, well, it's the kind of thing that always used to amuse me when you'd hear, you know, people like Fintan talking very sympathetically about unionism and the unionist position, the neo-unionists, and attacking the nationalists. When the reality is that all we're talking about is actually a slip of language. Unionists are just British nationalists, as opposed to Irish nationalists. But why one form of nationalism is acceptable over another? But you see, it is, obviously, because English nationalism or English identity politics, as expressed in Brexit, is very bad. Very bad thing. But I wonder, could it be? No. It couldn't be because they're Tories and Conservatives and Sinn Féin is of the left.
Maybe deep down, Fintan has a deep longing for the old left-wing death squads.
The whip of the lash. And why not? A mutual friend of ours in Young Fine Gael tweeted when it became obvious that the great wave was indeed coming. He said, "I hope when the lorries come around to pick us all up, that they take me in the first wave. It would be terribly humiliating not to be picked up onto the fourth or fifth wave." You know, if you're going to be taken, you want to be important enough to be taken first. And off to the camp. Anyway,
we will see you on Wednesday, where we will actually have the figures, and we'll probably run quickly through the figures, the most prominent removals, and then switch to something else, because, to be fair, we don't want to over-labour this, because there's a high chance we'll be doing this again in 6 months.
But until then, we'll say goodbye.
All the best.